Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 38, 5 Tips for Better Cooking. Hey everybody, thank you for downloading and listening to this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the show that helps aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen. It's been a while since I've been with you. In fact, the last couple of episodes I've done were quick fixes, and even the most recent one of those were a couple of weeks ago. So I apologize for that. I have been quite busy this summer, and as I record this, I'm sitting in my office amid stacks of boxes. We're in the process of selling our house and buying a different house, and we're deep in the middle of that. So it's been a little bit tough to sit down and put an episode together, but I am stealing a little bit of time today to do that. Before we get started and everything else, though, I just do want to remind you that if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at TKCPodcast or Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. And if you haven't done so already, I'd like to encourage you to head over to my website at kitchencounterpodcast.com and sign up for my email list. Now, I promise I won't spam you with emails, but if I have something of interest or if I need to let you know about maybe a new episode coming out or perhaps a contest, I can do it in the email list and you'll be one of the first people to know about it. So I won't spam you. I won't send you too many emails. But if you're interested in special news or episode updates, things like that, you know, we're talking maybe one email a month, if that. So head on over to kitchencounterpodcast.com and you can sign up for my email list. A couple other pieces of business before I get right into the main content for the show today. I want to mention that in a few weeks, probably October 2015, I'm not sure when you'll get this episode and listen to it, but I'm going to be starting kind of a side gig doing voiceover work. So I haven't decided yet exactly where I'm going to make myself available to do that, if I'm going to do things like Fiverr or Elance or those sorts of things, but I am going to be doing some voiceover work. So I've done some in the past, kind of informally, but I'm going to really try to make a go as a sort of a side gig on this. So if you're interested at all, if you have any applications where you might need a voice like mine, let me know. Go ahead and send me an email and I'd be happy to chat with you about it. All right. And I mentioned the word contest a few minutes ago. And I mentioned also that it's been a few weeks since I've talked with you. So it's kind of a thanks for hanging in there with me and waiting around for a new episode. I've decided to try something new this time around, and I'm going to be doing an Amazon giveaway. Now, this is a new program that Amazon.com does where I can select some prizes and they will run a giveaway for me where if you follow a link I provide you and you're one of the lucky people, you will receive a prize. And for my prize this time around, I have selected two copies of The Cook's Bible, The Best of American Home Cooking by Christopher Kimball. This is a really fantastic book. Christopher Kimball is the same person behind Cook's Illustrated and America's Test Kitchen, if you're familiar with those media empires. Really, really top-notch stuff when it comes to cooking. And this is the paperback version of his Cook's Bible, The Best of American Home Cooking. And I'm going to be giving two of these away. Now, I'm not going to tell you just yet how in the world you can get a hold of one of these. That's going to come on a little later in the show. So I'm going to be mean about it and make you listen through a little bit before I give away the big hint. But trust me, there are a couple waiting for you. And listen on, and I will let you know how you can try to get a hold of one of these for yourself. All right, so I mentioned I haven't had time to put an episode together, and I had a lot of ideas for episodes, but I haven't really been able to build one out full size to completion on any one topic lately. So I decided to take a few of the topics I had been working on kind of here and there and combine them into one episode that I am calling 5 Tips for Better Cooking. So without boring you anymore, let's get right into it. So for this week's episode, I haven't cooked anything. I'm not going to be talking about any dishes in particular, but I wanted to bring up 5 items that I think if you embrace them, if you think about them, if you apply them to your own situation, they will make you a better cook and they'll make your time in the kitchen more pleasant and more enjoyable, and your end results are going to turn out better in the long run. In the past, when I've done episodes like these, I've kind of done maybe some more practical ideas, and other times I've done more philosophical ideas. This is going to be a combination of the both. So I have five items, and a couple of them are practical, very practical, and a couple of them are a little more philosophical or designed to make you think or reconsider maybe a position you've held in the past about food or cooking. But what I would really love is, after I get through these, if you agree or disagree on any of these, or if you have a twist or a better idea related to these topics, I'd love to hear from you. Again, just send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com and let me know what you have to say, and I'll bring it up on the next show. All right, I'm going to start with the more practical tips first. And my very first tip, and this is a tip I've talked about, this is an idea I've talked about several times, but I feel like I can never talk about it enough. And the first tip is, don't skimp on essential tools. So what do I mean by that? Well, you know, in the long run, when you're cooking, when you're in the kitchen, it really doesn't matter what kind of colander you use or what kind of oven mitt you like, or if your cheese grater has a metal or a plastic handle, or if your mixing bowl is stainless steel or glass. Those things are all kind of incidental tools and items, and they're all going to do the job decent. They're going to do the job good enough. You're going to find items that you really like, and you can probably find them relatively inexpensively. But there are a few things where you really want to focus your energy and, of course, your limited resources, your money, where you're really going to get the most out of it, because these are items that you're going to use a lot, and they really do make a difference in your kitchen time. The first one, there's a few in my mind. The first one is, I've said this a million times before if I've said it once, and that's a good knife. Please, if you're going to spend any time in the kitchen, if this is a journey you're starting out on, or if you've been at it for a while and you don't have a good knife, really the first thing you should invest in is a decent knife. And when I say decent knife, I'm not talking about a $500 blade that you get at the custom knife boutique shop down the road. I'm just talking about, you know, a $70 or an $80 or a $90 blade that you can get at most department stores like Macy's or online at Amazon.com. Both Wusthof and Henkel's make good knives in this price range. So if you get yourself a good chef knife, a good 6 or 7 inch chef knife for $80 or $90, it's going to be solid, it's going to be sharp, it's going to hold its edge, and it's going to make your prep time and your cooking time so much more pleasant, and it's going to be less of a safety concern in the kitchen because you're not trying to saw through something with a subpar knife. Now, what's the other essential item I think you should have? There are two others. One other is a good pan. Of course, you can't really cook if you don't have something to cook in. And while there are hundreds and hundreds of different options and varieties and ways you can put together your cooking battery, you really just need, for starters, one really good, solid, dependable pan, something like a skillet with high sides and a flat bottom where you can fry, you can saute, you can put a lid on and simmer. You can do a lot of different things with a good quality saute pan. And the material choice is really up to you, but I would recommend something like a stainless steel with a heavy bottom. Cast iron is good. It can be a little finicky and it's quite heavy, but they do last a long time. It's inexpensive. But I would say if you really want to invest in a good piece of versatile cooking equipment, then maybe a stainless steel saute pan is the way to go. And then finally, for the third essential tool, you really want to get yourself an instant read thermometer. So when quality and food safety comes into play, really the only way you can tell if your food is safe to eat or cooked properly, without any shadow of a doubt, especially if you're cooking proteins like meats, poultry, is with a food thermometer. Now, a really good instant read thermometer is made by Thermapen. They're going to run you about $95. That's an investment. That's a good tool that's going to last you a long time. It's very accurate and it takes temperatures very quickly. You can get by with good instant read thermometers about half that price as well. And if you think that's a lot of money to spend on an instant read thermometer, the way I think about it is, I was just at the store this morning and I was walking through the meat department and I was just looking at prices on beef. And if you want to buy yourself a ribeye steak, you can plan on spending between $15 and $20 per steak right now. So it doesn't take screwing up a lot of ribeye steaks because you've overcooked them before, you know, a $50 or an $80 instant read digital thermometer sounds like a good investment. At the very least, get an inexpensive one so you're not completely cooking in the dark. Okay, are you ready for tip number two? You can't cook without fire. Now, I think this one sounds pretty obvious, but what I mean in a more general sense is cooking requires heat. And I'm not trying to be so obvious as to be like, duh, everybody knows that you have to have heat when you cook. But so often you can sabotage a dish or a recipe when you're cooking if you're not bringing your pans up to temperature before you use them. And you just think through it. If you've ever fried an egg, if you've ever planned on frying an egg, you can do it one of two ways. You can put the pan on the stovetop, turn on the burner, and drop an egg in the pan right away. And typically what happens is it just sits there kind of lazily, doesn't move, slowly turns from clear to kind of opaque white. It doesn't really fry. It's not frying. It's not really cooking like you want it to cook. However, if you turn that pan on to medium and then let it sit for a couple of minutes before you pop that egg in there, that egg hits the pan, it immediately starts sizzling and popping. It's frying. It's getting the texture. It's cooking like you want it to cook. You're frying an egg. So that's just one example. Another example is if you want to brown meat. You don't want to put your pan on the burner cold, turn on the burner, and just throw the meat right in the pan because it's just going to sit there. And then as the temperature comes up, it's actually going to start cooking that meat before it has a chance to brown it really nicely. What you want is a very hot pan with oil, so when the meat hits it, it immediately starts browning. And this can also be translated over to things like boiling water. So if you're going to cook pasta, it's imperative that you bring your water to a boil first. A boil doesn't mean there's a couple of bubbles floating up from the bottom of the pan. It means the water is roiling, it's boiling, there's bubbles coming up, the surface of the water is turning over. You know what water looks like when it boils. And don't worry, you can't overboil water. Well, I guess you can if you let it boil until it all steamed away, but once you get it up to temperature, which by the way is 212 degrees Fahrenheit, but you don't, of course, need to measure the temperature of your water. You'll know when it's boiling because, like I said, it's really moving. But the reason that's important is when you put pasta into your water, it will immediately lower the temperature of the water. And if your water isn't at a good boil, it will take a lot longer for the water to come back up to a boil. And what you've got is your pasta sitting in water and it's not cooking properly. It's just not boiling. It's not at the right temperature. So it's important to get things hot when you're cooking. Cooking with fire, cooking with heat. Always preheat your oven, always preheat your pans. Make sure your water comes up to the proper temperature for whatever application you're trying to do. Now, a quick side note on the whole, you can't cook without fire. I just read a really, really great book by an anthropologist called Richard Wrangham, and the title of this book was Catching Fire, How Cooking Made Us Human. And it was kind of a tour of human origins, and with his main idea being that learning to cook is really what developed humans from our ancestors, from our primitive, you know, from those common ancestors we shared with other primates. Cooking was really what it was. It wasn't eating meat. It wasn't hunting. It wasn't walking upright. It was actually cooking, and cooking actually allowed the development for all these other things to come along. It's a very good book. I highly recommend it if you have any sort of an interest in human origins or cooking. All right, let's go on to tip number 3. Don't be afraid to drop acid when you cook. No, not that kind of acid. I'm talking about acid like lemon juice or lime juice, vinegars. Acid, and I've mentioned this before on previous shows, but acid is a really, really great way to maximize the flavor in your dishes. Salt. You should always salt your food. You should salt and season your food during the cooking process all the way through, because if you get to the end of the cooking process and you haven't salted your food, it's too late. But aside from salt, people kind of use salt as a crutch. Oh, the food doesn't taste quite right. Let's throw some more salt on it. But salt can only go far in seasoning a dish and kind of combating those bitter flavor compounds in food. That's what salt does. It combats the bitter flavor compounds, brings out more flavor. If you go too far with salt, your food gets salty and it can become inedible. Vinegar does much the same thing that salt does when it comes to food in battling those bitter compounds. So oftentimes, if you've been seasoning your food throughout, a great way to finish your dish is with just a squeeze of fresh lemon juice or a teaspoon of white vinegar or balsamic vinegar or rice vinegar or wine vinegar. There are lots of different acids out there you can use, citrus and vinegar being the most common. A little bit of acid can take your dish from good to great. especially if you're cooking a dish that doesn't have much, if any, acid in it to begin with. So things like tomato sauce already has a lot of acid in it, and it probably won't benefit from adding much more acid. But things like stews or soups or sautéed vegetables, things that just don't have a lot of acid, will benefit greatly from just a little bit at the end. If it's not something you currently do, I guarantee it will make a gigantic difference in the way your dishes turn out. Okay, two more to go, and these are the kind of philosophical ones. So let me jump right in with the first one, and that is simply, don't be afraid of your food. A few weeks ago, I contributed a piece to the Comatose podcast called Don't Fear Your Food. Now, the Comatose podcast is a very interesting podcast. It's weekly. It comes out, and they usually have short segments from different contributors on a wide variety of topics, literature, poetry, current events, politics, stories. I happen to contribute a piece about food, of course, and I called it Don't Fear Your Food. If you want to check it out, it was Comatose podcast. I think it was episode 53 from July 9th, 2015. So I was inspired to talk about it because if you're remotely interested in food or eating or cooking, which I think most of us are in some way or another, on the internet now, it's just about impossible to avoid information about the food we eat or the way we cook or where our food is grown. Right now, in this piece, in this other podcast, I mentioned things like organic versus non-organic food, GMO versus non-GMO, gluten-free, paleo diets, low-carb, vegan, sugar-free, etc., etc. It just goes on and on. Basically, every day we're almost hit with a barrage of don't eat this, don't cook that, avoid all the things that have scary-sounding ingredients or maybe a scientist had a hand in creating. So I felt moved to do a piece on this because, you know, sometimes you can't believe everything you read on the internet, believe it or not. Just because someone has a nice blog or even a podcast like yours truly, it doesn't mean you should believe everything they say right out of their mouth. So much so on the internet now, it seems like everybody's got the silver bullet. Everybody's got the magic solution to health problems, to weight loss and weight gain, to why people get cancer, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's GMO foods or it's pesticides or whatever it is. But the bottom line is really there's no one single source of issues. There's no one single source of solutions for these issues. So you have to take what you read and what you hear on the internet with a grain of salt. What it can do when it comes to cooking, though, this sort of constant barrage of fear-mongering is almost what I would call it, is it can make us afraid of our food. It makes us not enjoy our food. It makes us go out of our way to avoid certain foods or certain ways foods are raised or whatever, that it really makes it difficult for us to put together healthy food, complete meals, inexpensively, relatively. Basically, all I'm trying to say here is don't be afraid of your food. Cook the foods you want to eat. Cook the foods you think are healthy for you and your family. Look into the facts. Look into the data. Talk to the activists. Talk to the farmers. Talk to the scientists. Talk to the people that are doing the research. Talk to the people that are gathering the data. And then draw your own conclusions from whatever they present to you. But just don't be afraid of your food. Cook what you love to cook, and you're going to be just fine. And then the second part of that I mentioned is don't be forced to cook food you hate. You know, I'm always struck when I read healthy food blogs. And by the way, I'm not at all against cooking healthy or trying to find ways to make food healthier. But I'm always struck when you read something like, hey, these chocolate chip cookies I made with soy chocolate and quinoa flour taste just like the real thing, maybe even better. Newsflash, folks, that's total BS. There's no such thing as a chocolate chip cookie that tastes better if it's not made with the stuff that chocolate chip cookies should be made from. Okay. Again, if you can eat chocolate chip cookies and that's the only way you can get them, more power to you. But I almost get the sense sometimes that these people really are struggling, you know, putting on a happy face now that they've bought into this lifestyle, that they've got to cook this sort of stuff the way they have to cook it or feel they have to cook it, and smile and try to convince others that really it's as good or better than the real thing. I don't really buy that. So let's go on to the last tip. And this is something I call finding your food or your cooking base camp. So what exactly do I mean by that? Well, it's just kind of a weak analogy to the idea that if you're going to climb a mountain, you don't just start from your house and walk to the mountain and start climbing it. You usually pick a place at the bottom of the mountain where you set up a camp, where you can fortify yourself, where you can rest up, where you can get ready to tackle that mountain. Well, the same is kind of true when it comes to cooking, especially if you don't have a lot of experience cooking. What I mean by finding your cooking base camp is kind of find your comfort zone. You know, it's really easy to get some recipe books and start sampling recipes and ingredients and cooking methods. It's really easy to go wide, but not deep. It's really easy to try a lot of different things, but not necessarily get good at any of it. So while I don't think that's a bad approach, I think you know enough about yourself to know what you like to eat. And if you know what you like to eat, you probably already know what you'd like to cook. So find that, find those foods, find those ingredients, find those cooking methods, and I say go deep with them. So if you like eggs, for example, you know, figure out how to cook eggs every which way you can. Figure out what kind of preparation methods you love, what preparation methods you don't like. And I'm not saying shun all other ingredients and food methods, but really give it a try to go deep on that one particular thing. And what you'll find is once you get comfortable cooking those ingredients or those methods, you're going to be able to start expanding your comfort zone while being able to anchor to that thing you've perfected. So for an example, for me, I love risotto. I can make risotto in my sleep. I don't need a recipe. I have the ingredients on hand. Usually I can just put one together generally easily. And I don't even really think about it. So now let's say I wanted to try to learn how to cook some other things. Let's say I've never worked with scallops before and I want to sear some scallops and I maybe want to do a different type of risotto that calls for roasting some red peppers. And let's say I've never done that before. Now I can start to explore other techniques, other ingredients. I still have the risotto as kind of the base of the dish, but I'm totally comfortable with that. I know that's going to turn out great. But now I can concentrate on maybe roasting red peppers. Do I want to buy jarred roasted peppers? Do I want to roast my own? How do I do that? How do I sear scallops? That sort of a thing. So I can keep the component, I can keep the parts of the dish that are comfortable to me, that I'm good at, that I have no trouble with, and I can start expanding from there. And once you start going deep on a few things, it just kind of multiplies. So find the things that you love to make, get really good at them, go deep with them, and then start expanding from there. And it's going to be a lot easier to learn things, to remember things, and to enjoy things as you kind of expand your cooking comfort zone. All right, those were my five tips for this episode. Let me recap them really quick for you. First, don't skimp on the essential tools in your kitchen. For me, they're a knife, a thermometer, and a good pan. You might have others, but find out what it is you use all the time and what you can't live without, and get the best that you can afford for those things. Second, you can't cook without fire. This is a really easy one to remedy. Again, I've done it before. I've seen other people do it. If you don't get your pan hot enough when you're trying to cook what you're trying to cook, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle for the rest of that dish. Third, don't be afraid to drop acid when you cook. Haha, of course, I'm talking about lemon juice, lime juice, citruses, vinegars, to really bring out the flavor in that final dish. Then I talked about not being afraid of your food. Don't worry so much about what you're putting on your plate. Unless you're eating chocolate cakes and pepperoni pizza for your three squares a day, you're probably going to be fine. And then finally, find your cooking base camp. Find your cooking comfort zones. Get really good at those things. Go deep and then start expanding from those points. You're going to learn more. You're going to learn faster. You're going to be less stressed and your food's going to be great. All right, if you've got other tips or ideas that you'd like me to talk about on an upcoming episode, send me an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Hey, remember at the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that contest with the Amazon giveaway. Well, I want to talk about that right now. Now, if you're listening to me talk about this right now, you've got an inside track because I'm not sharing this information on social media. I'm not telling anyone about it other than the folks that are actually listening to this episode. However, I did send out an email telling folks I was going to talk about it. So if you're on my email list, you got kind of an inside track to listen to this episode right away. So you might want to go and sign up to my list. Now, here's what you need to do. Go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest. On that page will be a link to Amazon and the Amazon giveaway for the two copies of The Cook's Bible, The Best in American Home Cooking. Now, the way the contest works is you'll click on that link, and if you have an Amazon account, you'll need to sign in. If you don't have an Amazon account, you'll need to make one. And the contest is set up so that at certain intervals, a book will be given away. Could be that every 10th person that signs in will get the book. Could be that every 30th person will sign in to get the book. I'm not going to tell you what the interval is, but the point is you need just to log on to Amazon through that link, click on the little box icon, and you'll know right away if you've won or not. Now, you do need to live in one of the 50 United States or the District of Columbia, and you do need to have a valid shipping address. So those are the other restrictions. But the great thing is if you win, Amazon will ship you the item. It won't cost you a thing. So once again, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest to get to the link. And by the way, this will expire in 1 week from the date this episode is released. So don't waste any time. Head on over to see if you've won. Well, thanks so much. It really does mean a lot to me that you download and listen to the show. Please tell your friends about it if you think it's worth sharing. And remember, if you'd like to get a hold of me, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com or Twitter at TKC Podcast or even Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast, and until next time, happy cooking.